Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Yesterday, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy announced that Luis Herrera, a native of Lima, Peru, and a New Jerseyan, lost his fight against COVID-19. He was just 47 years old, and tragically, Mr. Herrera was far from alone. Latino men in New Jersey account for nearly half of the deaths of adults under 50 years old, even though they are just 12% of the under 50 adult population. I'm going to say that again because it is such a breakout stat from this pandemic. Latino men in New Jersey account for nearly half of the deaths of adults under 50 years old in the state, even though they are just 12% of the under 50 population. Joining me now for a closer look is Karen Yee, WNYC reporter covering New Jersey, who has reported on this shocking disparity in the pandemic in our area. Hi, Karen. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Brian.
Can you give us more of the scope of the issue to start out? How do deaths of Latino men compare to deaths of white or black men in the same age group in New Jersey?
Yes. So when you look at deaths, and this is confirmed deaths that we looked at, of people ages 18 to 49, young Latino men are dying twice the rate of young black men, seven times the rate of young white men, and interestingly, 4.5 times that of Hispanic women. And so this was a statistic that the Department of Health highlighted back in October for a smaller subgroup of 20 to 34-year-olds. They had said that half the deaths were Hispanic men. And so that really caught my eye, and I wanted to see if that expanded more broadly to the young people who were dying of this illness. And it really did. I mean, like you said, they're a small subgroup of the young, the working young, but are overwhelmingly accounting for a lot of these young deaths in the state.
What's said to account for the gender disparity there?
Yeah, I mean, that's still unclear. A lot of the public health experts and the doctors I spoke to, were really interested by that difference. But I think it could be, you know, mom and dad both lost jobs. Maybe dad found somewhere to work. There's a child care issue. Mom is staying at home. You know, so dad is going out and getting exposed potentially. But then we know generally men and Latino men are more likely to have several underlying medical conditions, diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, all these things that put you at higher risk of getting COVID. And so I think this is all really layered, the reasons why we're seeing these deaths. And I think there's still a lot to look into, because if you look at the statistic nationally, right, 44% of COVID-19 deaths are among Latinos overall. That's Latino men and women. But that percentage is the percentage in New Jersey specifically. So 43% of the deaths, young deaths in New Jersey are mm-hmm. Latino men only. So there's something out of whack happening here in New Jersey. And I think, you know, we know some of the reasons, but I still think as we do this postmortem and we try and analyze what we've learned from this pandemic, I think that's one of the things that I really want to keep an eye on.
And we have time for a few phone calls. Any Latino men listening in New Jersey, we want to hear about how you've been living with this news the past year. And of course, it's not just news coming out of your radios or whatever devices. This is news among people you know in so many cases. So help us report this story. Help Karen Yee report this story. What's happening in your community? How is it affecting you and your choices? Do you perhaps live in an intergenerational household? What's that been like during this time? Is the toll that COVID is taking in your community making you reassess your own personal health or life choices? Of course, some of the reasons for the disparity have to do with lack of choices that people have relative to other people. How are you processing your grief? How do you plan on moving forward? 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Karen, a lot of attention is being paid to comorbidities, underlying conditions. And you're right that that's not the whole picture, and we'll get to that. But can you talk a little bit about pre-existing conditions as a contributor to this disparity?
Yeah, so we know Latinos and Latino men in particular are more prone to having a lot of these underlying conditions that I mentioned, right? Like heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure. And something that a doctor pointed out to me is a lot of these conditions don't always present as symptoms, right? So like very mild symptoms or maybe no symptoms at all. So you may not know that you have these things, these illnesses. And so you continue going to work and you continue potentially exposing yourself. And it sort of comes to a head because you're more likely to be exposed. You have these underlying conditions and then you get sick with COVID. And on top of that, you know, we know Latinos generally are more likely to be underinsured or uninsured when you look compared to other populations. So it sort of all compounds and sort of feeds on itself.
And we talked earlier in the show about undocumented workers, many of whom mm-hmm. are Latino, not getting COVID Relief Act benefits that other people get because they're undocumented. And some of these have to do with access to health care. And so that contributes to underlying conditions.
Right. So if you don't have care or you are underinsured, you know, you don't, that means you don't have a primary care doctor. You're not going to the doctor regularly. You're again, not catching these things because you're not getting checked up regularly. And you're also less likely to go to a doctor and take, you know, money off the table, for your family. If you have, you know, if you're not, if you don't necessarily have a huge savings account or you don't have health insurance. And so that's what I heard in a lot of these families that I spoke to. It was, you know, the lack of care and the lack of access to care was really a barrier for these men and these fathers wanting to go to the hospital, you know, fearing what it would cost, and sort of delaying going to the hospital until it was too late.
And you write about in your story the calculation that some of the individuals and families you reported on make when they are feeling sick, like paying hospital bills versus putting food on the table, or the potential for paying hospital bills versus putting food on the table, which keeps them from getting the care that they need. And here's a clip of Stephanie Silvera, an epidemiologist at Montclair State, who you spoke to on the issue of comorbidities.
Health disparities have long been written off by people as the result of bad behavior, right? And I think what COVID is really highlighting in a way that cannot be ignored is that a lot of these disparities are systemic inequality.
So there you go, on many levels. Another story from your reporting that I'll highlight along these lines, you told the story of Rinaldo Rojano, who died of COVID-19 on December 14th at the age of 44. He began experiencing symptoms after his shift at a car wash in Elizabeth. And when he told his story, she urged him, told his daughter, I should say, she mm-hmm. urged him to go to the hospital. And he didn't, for exactly the reason we were discussing, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, that family is what I heard from several other families, right? He was, this family lives in Elizabeth, and he worked at the car wash right next to their home. And so what's sad about it is the family is, you know, looks outside, goes next door, and they're reminded of sort of the place where the father, the husband got sick. And so he was somebody who didn't have health insurance, as a car washer, worked 6 days, long days out in cold, out in heat, extreme heat, extreme cold, and had diabetes. He got diagnosed with diabetes 4 years ago and couldn't afford the treatment. So it was untreated diabetes, got exposed at work, and for a long time, you know, didn't go to the hospital. I mean, I think a part of him didn't want to believe that he was sick. He told his wife that he was scared of how people were dying from the illness, you know, alone and away from his family. And then there was the issue of cost, right? You know, you're in a pandemic. His family, some of his family members were undocumented. They weren't eligible for any sort of aid. And so if he didn't work, if he didn't continue to go to work, there was no income, no income on the table. Eventually, he was rushed to the hospital. He actually went to get a COVID test, and the staff there rushed him to the hospital. And most of his household was sickened. You know, his wife was also intubated, put on a ventilator, in a coma. She survived. His kids were sick. And he, unfortunately, didn't make it. And, you know, he was actually in the hospital for a month. He was in a hospital for a long time. but Ray, one of the many stories.
Mm-hmm. Ray and Freehold, you're on WNYC with WNYC and Gothamist, New Jersey reporter Karen Yee. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, my input is I had COVID a few months ago. I'm a painter, so construction. And construction is booming in New Jersey. And we have contact with all sorts of people. So I definitely think that's one of the reasons, I mean, mm-hmm. that's what I think anyway, that could be one of the reasons Latino men are getting, you know, higher rate, especially men, not women, because men are, you know, more men work in construction than women.
Can I ask if you work in construction, Ray, over this year of the pandemic, have the employers, have the construction site managers taken steps to provide you better precautions and all the people working?
Well, yes and no. I mean, not always. That would be my answer. Sometimes in some places they do, they try, you know, especially at the beginning, they try to, you know, avoid, you know, too many people in one construction site and stuff like that. But as time went by, the rules got a little, you know, looser. Or so. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yes and no, a little, not enough, apparently.
Ray, thank you very much. Karen, what were you trying to say a minute ago?
Yeah, I was going to say that's exactly right. I mean, Latino and Latino men are overrepresented in the service sector, service-type jobs, essential jobs like construction, like painting, you know, car washer, restaurant industry. And so many men continued to work throughout the pandemic. You know, in some cases, yeah, PPE was a problem, right? Not getting access to masks and gloves because nobody really had access to masks and gloves during the worst of it. And so you saw a lot of these deaths happen in April. But the family we just spoke about, the car washing family, he died in December. And so, you know, it wasn't just, you can't just attribute it to, you know, this wave we were all inundated with of COVID. It's existing issues that continued through the pandemic and continue to this day.
Thanks, Ray. Call us again. Diane in Flushing, you're on WNYC. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Brian. I'm Puerto Rican myself, and I just wanted to sort of preface what I'm about to say by just pointing out that I think all of the factors spoken about so far are responsible for the majority of this. Mm-hmm. But something I find deeply concerning that I think is at least responsible for some of them is sort of this perception of wearing masks as being in like kind of conflict. I haven't spoken on the radio before. I'm a little nervous. But there's this concept of machismo mm-hmm. in my culture and in Latin American cultures in general. And I think sometimes wearing that mask among mostly people like younger men around like 20s, mid 30s, I think it's seen as kind of an insult to them in that way to be asked to wear a mask. Like just anecdotally speaking, just mm-hmm. from me speaking to those men myself, so suggesting they wear it or seeing my friends, like, the reaction tends to be very aggressive, at least among young men. I don't think that speaks for all men of like Latin American men of that age group or like in general, but I just think that's something that should be considered. I do think that wearing a mask is seen as being like an insult in that way.
And we certainly saw the white, non-Hispanic former president of the United States reinforce that message that there's something unmanly about wearing the mask. Diane, thank you so much for that. Karen, did that come up in your reporting at all?
Yes, I'm really glad you brought that up, Diane, because sort of this culture of machismo and also like martyrdom was something that like public health experts also brought up, right? Something that they see. And I think that feeds into this idea of, you know, manhood, right? Like the true definition of manhood and fatherhood and being head of the household and being the breadwinner is, you know, you sort of put up with everything and you continue to go to work despite the pandemic and you don't take care of yourself because you take care of your family first, right? And no, I'm fine. I feel fine. I don't need to go to the doctor. I'm okay. I don't feel that bad. It's not that bad. And I think that mask wearing and mask compliance that sort of feeds into this culture of of martyrdom that a lot of the, you know, health experts acknowledge that exists and really saw play out in this pandemic. And again, I think that's another layer to why we're seeing Hispanic men so disproportionately hit. And I want to talk a little bit more about like this idea of self-sacrifice that I found really interesting in my reporting. Mm-hmm. You know, you have like this almost cultural identity, right? Like what is a Hispanic male? What is a Latino man? And it's somebody who goes to work 6-7 days a week, is working hard and doesn't really put himself first, right? It's sort of passed generation to generation, continuing this act of sacrifice for the family. And so when you have a pandemic, that it sort of exposes that, and it sort of exposes this lack of self-care, right? Taking care of yourself, being seen as taking care of your family as well. Yeah. And so those are conversations that I think we need to have with the Latino community within themselves, and also, you know, that public health experts are also trying to educate on.
And in your reporting on Reynaldo Rojano's death, and Diane, mm-hmm. thank you so much for your call. You call us again, too. We're going to end on a really sad note here, because you speak to his 19-year-old daughter, Elizabeth, who is grieving her father, and it's almost as if now that things are opening back up, she's realizing even more acutely that he's gone. So can you talk about this concept of double grief that you reported on?
Yeah, I think this applies to a lot of people who have lost loved ones, not just the Latino community, but I heard overwhelmingly from families, you know, we lost our loved one when we were quarantined and in isolation and sort of separated from our lives, right? And we went through that grieving process and sort of that acceptance process. And now with things opening up again and us, you know, going back to school or our routines, it's sort of another grieving process, right? Because now we have to go out in the community and you get the questions of what happened to so-and-so, or, you know, I'm so sorry for your loss. And so you kind of go again, you sort of grieve this person again, and this idea of double grief. And, you know, I heard that so much from families, like the more they were able to maybe get together or talk to neighbors going through this process again. But I also, you know, for Elizabeth, who's 19, and her family, I mean, the impact when you lose your father and he was so young, right, there's this impact on the younger generation and in his family. You know, his son now is working at the car wash. His son has sort of taken up the mantle of breadwinner for the home, and in conditions that are not changed from the conditions his father worked in. And so you sort of see this cycle repeat itself, and nothing has changed for that family. And so you think about the impact of that. And we know that children who have these adverse events happen to them are also more likely to have poor health outcomes in the long run. And that's something that's been studied. And so, again, you see this generational cycle continue again, unfortunately.
Listener on Twitter writes, appreciate the discussion. Can't understand how agricultural and construction workers are not yet eligible for vaccinations mm-hmm. in New York. And I realize your reporting is in New Jersey and Canada. We just have 20 seconds left. But those would seem to be job descriptions, job categories that are that disproportionately employ Latino men. And we know that there have been agricultural outbreaks. Construction workers are front facing, as the previous caller Ray was describing, and yet they're apparently not included on the basis of jobs. Last thought, yeah. 10 seconds.
Right. So in New Jersey, on March 29th, more essential workers like in food production, agriculture will be eligible for the vaccine. But that's a great point, right? Like if we're trying to fix these disparities, there has to be intentionality when we design reopenings and who is eligible for the vaccines. But in New Jersey, at least as of March 29th, a lot more of these workers will be able to get the shot.
WNYC's Karen Yee, thank you for your amazing reporting.
Thank you so much, Brian.